Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Scarfo Show. Welcome to another edition of the Scarfo Show. A little bit late on this Sunday due to unforeseen circumstances. However, I had to get a show out today because we're going to break 500 listens, and I want to thank each and every one of you. My next guest, Laura DeFranco, has saved the day. She's a holistic healing and physical therapist, also an author. Laura, why don't you introduce yourself and let them know where they can find you?
Hey, Chris, thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, bravehealer.com, you guys. So I started out my career as a physical therapist and tagged on the word holistic to that pretty fast because I realized if you weren't looking at the whole person, mind, body, and soul, you weren't really, you know, doing much to help them heal. So I've been practicing almost 30 years now. And along the journey, started to do a lot of writing, and that kind of morphed into Brave Healer Productions, which is a current business for speaking and workshops and book writing and all kinds of fun stuff. So that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of who I am and what I'm all about.
Very cool. And let's discuss kind of what brought you to the whole world that is healing.
Well, you know, I was always an athlete, like literally from elementary school on up, I was doing something active. And when I started to think about what I might do for a living, I thought, oh, I'm going to be like a sports medicine doctor. So I played soccer all the way through school to up to 2 years of college, actually. Mm-hmm. Always ran. I did 3 marathons before children. And my latest endeavor is martial arts. And so, you know, I was so fascinated with what the body could do, like peak performance wise. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I started off thinking, oh, I'm going to be a sports medicine doctor, found physical therapy. There was a woman who came into our career center when I was in high school. I was about 16 at the time. And I listened to her speak at lunch one day, and I was jazzed after that. And I thought, okay, this is it. I'm going to go for it. And that's what I did.
Very cool. That's awesome that you found that at a fairly very young age.
I was pretty lucky, actually, because my grad school class was small. It was about 29 of us. And I would say 2/3 of those people were career change people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I really feel lucky to have found that at such an early age. And also just, you know, you can only look back in retrospect and go, whoa, okay, the universe had a plan for me. Because getting me into a healing career at that young age really is part of the reason I'm doing what I'm doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, excuse me. So physical therapy was where you started your journey, right?
Yep.
And what kind of learning did you do? What kind of courses did you take, professional training and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, as a physical therapist licensed, you know, in any particular state, you've got to take courses throughout the year. Usually you have to take around 2 courses a year, depending on the state that you're living in.
Right, to keep your certificate.
What's that?
To keep a certification?
Exactly, yeah, to keep your license. And, you know, if I started off on the list of courses, you'd get bored pretty fast. And when over a 30-year career, I've taken a lot of stuff. But what I really enjoyed from the get-go and pursued every year since is kind of a specialization in manual therapy. So hands-on healing. And I am I specialize in something called myofascial release. I also do craniosacral therapy. I've worked and taken courses in neurokinetic therapy, total motion release. Honestly, I could go on a list that's very, very long and you would get bored pretty fast. But just know that I always picked courses where I thought there was a theory that was more holistic, was more mind, body, soul. Like, you know, client comes in with an ankle sprain, and if you don't look at their whole body, you're going to miss something.
Sure, yeah.
And you might get temporary results and all of that good stuff, but I was not in it for temporary results. I was in it for something that lasted a little longer. And like I said before, very interested in peak performance. And that happens in the mind and the body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. So so let's not go down the long path of all the training courses. how about the is there one or two that stick out, like that that really confirmed your passion, let's say?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, early mentors in my first job, I'll have to credit a couple people, because that was another place I really felt like I got lucky with some fantastic mentors who are already doing this sort of holistic kind of therapy. And one of them, John Barnes Myofascial Release, is a way to assess and treat the mind body. And it's a hands-on, I'll call it a stretch technique for right now, because we could probably use your entire podcast show to educate the listeners about it. I know some of you know about some of this kind of stuff. You might have had physical therapy in the past, but I started in such a traditional environment in hospitals and outpatient clinics, and very quickly realized that that was not going to be the place I would stay because of the productivity standards. I mean, we were meant to see 16, 18 people a day. And how could you ever get your hands on and really do anything worthwhile in that short amount of time you were supposed to see people? So I quickly went out on my own back in about 2008. I opened up my own practice so that I could really practice these kinds of modalities, like the myofascial release and the craniosacral therapy, because you'd sit somebody down and you really want to know what's going on with them, like stress-wise, work-wise, relationship-wise. And traditional physical therapy doesn't do that. They don't pay attention to the whole person very much, and that's where they're missing the boat.
Yep. Yeah, I just came out of a long stint in physical therapy. I had a work injury in June, so I messed up my lower back really, really well. It's still a pain, but we got to get rid of most of the inflammation. My mobility is at par with what it was, maybe a slightly less because just like more inactivity, let's say, since. But mobility is fine. Pain is no longer constant. But it's just like I get flare ups all the time now, and I'm kind of searching for an alternative approach, basically. So I might actually come out to Methespa and get real holistic healing done. But
yeah, you guys can search too on myofascialrelease.com, because the practitioners are all over the country. Actually, they're all over the world.
Yeah.
And it really does behoove people to seek out that kind of practitioner, because, you know, you can be assured that you're going to be looked at in a little bit more holistic way. It is worth it, you guys. Totally worth it.
Yeah. And where I'm at right now with my injury, I definitely, because like the program that I was in, they did, we had a physiotherapist, an ergotherapist, and a massage therapist. So there was a kinesiologist as well. There was multiple people watching you daily. Like I was in a 5 day a week program for 6 hours a day, like really, really intensive, right? So like they did a great job getting me from basically like almost bedridden. It wasn't as bad by the time I started that, because they slowly but surely started physiotherapy a couple times a week to get me back to like on my feet and etc. But I was doing like 30 hours a week of physio, and so like they did a great job, but there's still kind of some stuff nagging. So I want to dig a little bit deeper, but unfortunately that program it lasts either 4 to 8 weeks depending on what gets approved from your employer type thing. And then, then they kind of, they let you fly with your own wings. So.
Yep. I get that. I get those programs, and it sounds like you've come a long way. But you know, what's cool is the awareness you have about wanting to kind of go a layer deeper and see what's possible as far as getting the rest of that, you know, better.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome. A lot of people walk around just sort of resigned to sort of what is for them, and they think that's all they can get.
Yeah. And the person that was in charge of, like the insurance program or whatever, She was kind of like, well, people just like live with pain after. And I'm like, that kind of doesn't sound like what I want to do. I'm 33 and I kind of don't want to live this way till I'm at least like 90, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And like you said, specifically holistic healing, that does really mind, body and soul, does generally, have better results, because like you mentioned earlier, stress, for me, whenever I get stressed, I get aches and pains, you know? So
yep.
Now that I have a huge sore point in my back, whenever I'm stressed, like it's all focused there, and it's kind of overwhelming, but I'm like you said, I am kind of aware of what happens and why. I just don't know how to fix it. So when I feel myself getting like crunched up, or when I feel myself, oh, my lower back is kind of hurting, I kind of do a 360, kind of take a look of what's going on, what's stressing me. Did I do any particular activity that could have flared it up? And then I kind of, you know, sit back, relax, do some stretching, and just kind of like breathe the stress away for momentarily, right? But again, looking for a permanent fix.
Yes, and every emotion that you experience has a actual physical body tissue effect in the body. You know, it's all connected, right? We know this.
Yeah, yeah.
So the most important thing you're doing is you're pausing, you're breathing, you're actually giving yourself a chance to feel what's there. And that body awareness is the first gateway to healing whatever's left over for people, except for we've been taught not to feel. So this is the habit. We go into things that numb up the feel, the pain, instead of just taking a moment, you know, understanding what's going on, understanding the stress levels, feeling it all. And then I use a lot of different sort of alternative tools, and along with all the awareness tools and the breathing and the stretching and all the good stuff, I'm actually also using writing as a healing tool now.
Right.
And that can be a powerful way for you to get into this residue, this leftover stuff that keeps bugging you.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome, powerful tool.
Yeah, and like we mentioned just offline before the podcast, writing has always been something that I've been not super passionate about, but whenever I get into a project, whenever I'm writing, I find it super hard to stop. And I kind of, pardon me, I like that feeling. You know, it for me, it makes me feel like it's something I should be doing, you know?
Yeah, I do know.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I like the idea that you're mentioning using writing as a tool to help heal. I assume it's kind of like writing maybe like a journal type thing, like kind of going into your mind and seeing what is left behind, if you want to discuss that a little.
And definitely, you know, I've been journaling since I was 15 years old. So it seems I've always been using the page as a tool of some kind. And when I kind of realized it later in my career, I began marrying these two things, all the different healing techniques and tools I've learned in my career. And I started matching it up with some of the writing stuff. And, you know, the tools I now teach are a combination of those two things. And you said looking into your mind. Yes, but the gateway to doing that is feeling the body. And so we think certain things. We also think that we have to think our way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really, we need to feel our way through.
Right.
We have to just sort of surrender to that bigger thing that knows the answers. There is that inner wisdom inside of you, your intuition, and the language of your intuition is the sensation of the body. And nobody gets taught this. You know, you don't get like intuition 101 in school like you should.
Right.
If you were lucky, you might have had parents who sort of were, you know, along maybe in a healing path, and they taught you some of these things. But most of us, no way. Most of us were actually taught the opposite, not to pay attention or not to feel.
Yeah, I don't know. Your last name's DeFranco, so I'm going to assume Italian origins.
Yes.
My last name's Scarfo, so my father was born in Italy. So.
Yes, I know. I noticed that. My grandpa was born in Sicily. Grandma was born in Italy. And my dad was, you know, born in the US, but
yeah. So yeah. So I mean, not to say that they're not Italians are super, super, super emotional, but usually it's the hot-blooded emotions, so like anger and rage and that sort of thing. Usually the healing doesn't really come out.
No, exactly. And if you were taught, like me, from a very young age to be a perfect good girl or boy,
yep,
then you were taught that you weren't allowed to be angry.
Right.
And if you were, you better shut up or not express it, because there was going to be consequences to that. And so, you know, people carry that for a lifetime, unfortunately. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, using some of these tools to kind of heal a few of those old wounds is not a bad idea. People don't want to go there. They actually don't want to open up their journal and start to write because they're a little bit afraid of that Pandora's box.
Yeah. And it's super uncomfortable, right? Being so vulnerable, even if it's being vulnerable to yourself, that's kind of a scary thing that I've noticed, is that people really don't like being uncomfortable. They really don't like being vulnerable. And it's like, and that's now, because I mean, I guess we've always kind of been that way. That's kind of like a survival of the fittest and instinctual. But now we're kind of afraid of being uncomfortable and vulnerable to ourselves. And I think that's a scary, scary thing.
It can be, very much so. It can be paralyzing. And, you know, you don't even want to write it for yourself. A lot of things. The thing that gets people stopped up too, and I know you've written, I call it out loud for the world, right? You've written things that you would like other people to read. So that's another level.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even writing for yourself, and, you know, I always tell people, listen, start the process and feel what you feel and do the writing. And later, if you really, really are feeling not so good about having that in black and white anywhere, you can burn those pages.
Right. Yeah.
So really, there can't be an excuse, because it's the process itself that is the magical process. So it doesn't even matter if you keep it. You can always destroy it later. It's really the process that shifts the energy.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, you're totally, you're acknowledging those feelings and those thoughts.
Exactly. And that is another way to acknowledge them. I hear your kiddo in the background. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Came down and surprised daddy.
Sounds like I've been feeling for the last couple of weeks. This darn season is not a good season for the colds.
Yeah, especially the East Coast is a killer now. I don't know what it's like for you over in DC, but we've got yesterday was actually really nice. It was mild. It was like 4 degrees Celsius, but the whole last week's been minus 10, minus 12.
Yes.
I don't know the
brutal
conversion to Fahrenheit, cause I'm not that cool, but,
it's been cold. It's been raining here for the last 3 days. You know, it's funny. Speaking of writing, I actually used one of these ideas of kind of flu season. I know it might sound weird. But being sick, you know, used to be a huge trigger for me. I worked in a hospital.
Yeah.
I worked in a place where I was, you know, I only had so many sick days, first of all.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, trying to be the perfect good girl, I didn't want to ever be sick from work. Then that would mean that, you know, there's people that were there and that they wouldn't be seen that day, or there'd have to be coverage, and all the guilt of, you know, actually having a cold and wanting to stay home. I was using that as a writing prompt the other day because I was kind of feeling it. And I'm like, oh, man, if I have to cancel this or that, and all that stuff that comes up inside of you, right, that's triggered.
Yeah.
Because we were taught not to miss a day of work,
that's
even
right.
If you were sick.
Yeah,
it's
that's
so
right.
Brutal.
And then, yeah, you get and like you said, you get shamed for being sick. And it's like, well, I could either come into work and be like, first, like a host of germs, you know, you spew
exactly.
That everywhere, so you get other people sick. On top
yep.
of that, you're at like very minimal performance. You're definitely not at top performance, and yeah, so it's like I don't necessarily understand the kind of the concept, and especially like some people, if you have sick days, okay, so you're being paid to be sick, but sometimes like they don't have sick days. So if they don't come in, you're actually saving that salary as well. You know, it's like, I don't know, some or most of business logistics aren't very logical.
No, I know.
They look at the fine print, which is money and like feet on the ground, and that's it. They don't really look further.
Yep. If they paid more attention to the human aspects and their employees, it would be a whole different scenario, right? So hopefully slowly changing, but
yeah,
maybe not as fast as we would like.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, I mean, I've done a ton of different jobs in over my professional career, let's say, and I've really enjoyed certain places and really hated other places. And most of the time it's specifically for those reasons, like which one has a humane approach, rather, you know, which one
yes.
actually cares for their employees and which one just has numbers associated to their employees. You know, it's, you can see that really, really quickly.
Yes, you can. Definitely.
And so, speaking about writing, you're working on a seventh book, I believe, correct?
Yes, I know that sounds crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, I love to write. I really do. It's my little refuge, that place where I get to sit and write out these thoughts and ideas. I have a really great story to tell you about my very first book, though, if you'd like to hear that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So my son at the time and I went to, and he was 5 and a half. He's 18 now, by the way, just to give you some perspective. But we were looking for something for him to do. We wanted him to maybe start an activity, like, you know, figure something out, get out there, socialize with the other kids, that type of thing. And we went into the YMCA, our local YMCA, to check out a Taekwondo class. And after we were finished watching, we walked out into the hall and I looked at him and I said, well, what do you think? You want to try this out? And he looked up at me and he said, I'll do it if you do it, Mom.
Oh, wow. So you only started once your boy was 5 and a half.
5 and a half. Wow. And 6 years later, we earned our black belts together.
Wow.
He was 11.
That's awesome.
Yes. And it was a fantastic story that ended up in a book, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I had always known I wanted to write a book. I, you know, if you ask my friends and family, they would tell you, you've been talking about this forever. And then it just would never happen.
Yeah.
And the 6 years that went by with all the training and I was, you know, doing my job as a healer, mom, all that good stuff that was going on in life, I was journaling. The whole time. I told you earlier, I've been journaling since I was 15. Well, I was serious about that. I journaled almost every day in general, but through that 6 year period of time, for sure, I was journaling a lot. So I looked at these books, these journals, and I thought, oh, my book is already written.
Wow.
And so that first memoir, it was called Living, Healing, and Taekwondo. It was self-published in 2012, and it was kind of a journey of those 6 years with him and the things I was learning in the martial arts, which, you know, we could probably talk about all day long as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, that's the story of the very first book. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
That is very cool. And I mean, for me, the thing that I always talked about and then never did was this podcast. So in the, over the end of the summer, I kind of put together a home studio, 'cause I'm also, an aspiring musician, if you can call it that. But so I put together a home studio with a bunch of microphones, like an audio interface and all the stuff that you need to make music, right? And then I was talking about making a podcast. A buddy of mine had me on his twice, and then I was like, well, if you don't just do it, it won't happen. You know, you can talk about it till you're blue in the face, but so just kind of get it done. So my first guests were like buddies of mine, who one of them was an author, one of them was the gentleman that does a podcast, my buddy Phil Better, and the author was TJ Grimm in question. So I had them on, and I really enjoyed the experience. They loved it because, like, TJ, my buddy, came in and he saw the setup, and it's like I have, like, you know, like a standard, I guess, studio setup, but for like a hobbyist, let's say, it's kind of neat, you know.
Yeah.
Like the double screens, two microphones, pop filters everywhere. It kind of looks like super professional, which to me is cool. Like, I like that. I like that, that idea that it looks awesome. And then, like, my quality is getting better and better, and my content. Luckily, I have great guests, that are interested in being on. So, like, it's kind of, the whole thing is driving itself, you know?
Nice. Yes.
But, and like, I was passionate about it. So, and I feel like when you're passionate about something, it comes through in the content. And now hearing your story about your first book, I kind of wish that I would have journaled that whole process, because now it's my memory is not so great. So I'll be able to write it all down, but I'll miss probably a ton of great pointers. However, being that this show is meant for me to learn things, I promise you I will start to journal now. I'll try to do it daily. but that sounds like a great way to write a book without like thinking about it, you know?
Exactly. And that's actually the best way to write anything, is without any expectation that anyone's going to read it at first.
Right. Yeah.
You just really have to move it out of yourself and not be censoring yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this, this seventh book, how is the, obviously the process is going to be way different because the first one came out of a journal, but how does this seventh book, like differ besides the process?
Yeah, I get your question. I'll back up because I want to tell you that the latest book that was released in June of this year by Possibilities Publishing Company is called Brave Healing, A Guide for Your Journey. And the reason I tell you about that book first, this latest one, is because that really was an amazing step for me. I have been a blogger since 2008, and Possibilities Publishing found me because they read a blog of mine online.
Wow.
And I got an email one day and it said, hey, we'd love to interview you for our blog. You know, we love the work you're doing and we would like to write something up. So I said, well, of course, you know, I was excited. It was like a publishing company.
Yeah.
And then after that was published, I emailed them back and I said, hey, so happy that you enjoyed that. What about looking at my book?
Yeah.
And the rest is history. And so to be picked up by an indie publisher was pretty cool after self-publishing the first memoir. I also self-published about four poetry journals in between there.
Right.
And so this next book, it's like, okay, so yeah, you know, I haven't necessarily journaled all the way through a process and I'm going to write about it now, but the next one is going to be dealing about, with fear. And it is a hot topic for me. You talked about being passionate about something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm passionate about? Having way more fun with the feeling of fear.
Sure.
And I'm, you know, tired of it paralyzing me, especially with the things I really want to do in my life. And so the kind of fear I'm going to be talking about in this new book is purpose-driven fear.
Okay.
And I really think that there's a difference between sort of that real kind of survival type of fear and this purpose-driven fear that we're constantly feeling, and we're either paralyzed by it or we're doing something about it to have more fun with it and move through it.
Yeah. And
that's the new book.
And what is that, like, what does purposeful fear look like? If you could describe it real, without going into your whole, I mean, if you want to read me your whole book, I'd love to hear it, but
nah, it's not all written yet. Purpose-driven fear has that feeling inside of you. And the problem is it feels like you're going to die. It feels like that same kind of survival fear. However, there are subtle differences. You still have an excited feeling inside of you. You still have a feeling of that passion and purpose and mission behind the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really the trick, is just, you know, having the tools to kind of move through it. You have to recognize it first, and it's the awareness that's the foundation.
Right on. And so now, you said you're not finished. Do you have a personal given deadline that you've given yourself for that?
Yes. First 10 weeks of the new year, the first draft will be finished by the end of that time. Awesome. I'm a pretty fast writer. I write a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I attribute that to this sort of body connection that we talked about earlier that I've developed and cultivated. So I can connect with that writing place and have the stuff move out of me, almost like you've heard of things being channeled.
Sure.
And I don't use that word lightly. I know it's a little woo-woo and out there for some people, but when you connect to that place, it'll feel like the writing is, or the whatever you're doing is moving through you from that bigger place. And so I've gotten pretty good at that. So yep, 10 weeks into the new year, I'm actually doing a book writing mastermind with some of the ladies from another workshop. And I'm going to guide 7 new authors in the new year, including myself. So I'll be the 8th.
Oh, wow. Wow. So that, like, the workshop will last 10 weeks, type thing, to get the book finished? Is that the idea?
You got it.
Nice. I don't know if you're familiar with Stephen Pressfield's book, The War of Art.
Oh, I have heard of that one, yes.
So for me, kind of, I don't know what your process is, and you can rebuttal once I give you my process from this book. Essentially, Stephen Pressfield goes into it. He has, every morning, he has like a particular routine that he does. And by 9 a.m., his routine is finished and he sits at his desk. And he goes, every morning at 9 a.m., I'm writing.
Yes.
He goes, if I write 100 words, if I write 1,000 words, if I write 10,000 words, I'm at my desk at 9 a.m. every morning. So his belief or his system that he's built is that if the inspiration should come, or if the muse decides to show his or her face, they know where to find me. So he goes,
nice.
Like, that's how he sets himself up. And obviously, writing, the more prolific you are, the I don't know about the better your writing is, but at least the more consistent it'll be. If you keep creating content, the content will keep flowing, right? So
I totally agree with you. And I actually do think it becomes better. And here's how. Because it comes from that authentic, truest, deepest place inside of you when it's flowing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And your writing doesn't have to be, quote, perfect. Like, who, you know, what standard are we holding ourselves here to, you know?
Right, right,
to?
Right.
So perfect is what you make it mean. And when it's connected like that, people resonate with it because it's coming from that soul place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that idea of that whole morning routine. Another book is The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod, and he's got that routine down too. So there's something to this. A lot of people talk about your morning routine,
yeah,
and how that sets you up for success for the rest of your day and actually your life.
Yeah, and I mean,
there's something to it.
I read a book one of the things that started me creating this podcast actually was a book called Own the Day, Own Your Life. It's by Aubrey Marcus. He's the president and CEO of On It Supplements, and essentially he's also a writer now and all that fun stuff. But his Own the Day, Own Your Life idea is he lays out the plan for a perfect day. So how to be the most productive and all this. And obviously it starts with your morning routine. So he says, wake up, avoid screen time for the first little bit because it's artificial light. Get yourself exposed to sunlight as quickly or as organically as possible. So he talks about like UV lamps and that sort of thing. If you're out on the East Coast in the winter months, we just don't get sun. So he's like, create a source of light so you get your circadian rhythm set up. And also he finishes that off at night to you know, have a bedtime routine as well. But so you wake up, you get moving, you get in the sun. He starts off with an ice cold shower to kind of break those mental barriers of oh no, I can't do this because it's too cold or whatever. But once you get into that routine and do it often enough, it becomes super comfortable. Like I kind of slacked off lately, but I try to do it at least 3 days a week where I do a 3 minute super, super cold shower. And it really, I mean, it wakes you up to boot. Like that's an extra bonus, but you do kind of quiet up your mental barriers, if you will. And then, yeah, he goes on to explain how you should, you know, be productive from this hour to this hour and then have a funky lunch because it's different. But so the morning routine is really a huge topic, and it's really, it makes sense, right? Like Marines and people in the Army, they always talk about making your bed first thing in the morning. That's a big one.
Yes.
And it's like if you're able to win right away first thing in the morning, it does set yourself up to... It's funny. I had this conversation with one of my other guests, and you're not really setting yourself to keep winning. But what you're gonna do is you're gonna focus now on the winnings and not on the losses. Like the example that my buddy gave me was: first thing in the morning, you make your bed. The day goes on, and now you're gonna be focused on, well, I won the morning, so you focus on the positives. He goes, if first thing in the morning you stub your toe, all you're going to be focused on is the negatives now, because it started off with like an ouch. So it's really where your mind goes is what's going to, cause you're going to probably have the same day. you know, whether you make your bed or not. But what you're focused on is what's going to change. Or at least that's his idea, yes. Right? So
powerful, powerful, powerful mindset tool to start your day off like that. And it's wherever you put your focus and intention, the energy is going to grow from that place. So that's so important.
Yeah,
yes.
So that's just kind of a nice little caveat is if your morning routine is on par, you're just gonna have that energy going, right? So.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, if you're listening and you're having a rough time and you're waking up in the morning and that life is not like that for you, and all of a sudden you're already in the thoughts of the to-do of the day and it's pulling you down into your pit, I call it. This is where the zombies of the world need to wake up. I sound really harsh when I say that. However, if you're in it and you're aware of it, that is already step number one. Yay for you that you know it's happening. But you got to take a breath and take a gigantic step backwards and be the observer of it so that you can change it. So the quote is, with awareness, you have a choice. If you're unconscious about it, you're stuck in the pit and you'll be stuck in the pit all day long and probably weeks and months and years worth.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, just notice what's going on. And that's the very first simple step. The foundation for all the change you'd really like to see is just noticing what's going on. And then you get to choose. The thing is, we don't think we have a choice, but if you're aware of it, you do have a choice to pick a different thought, different belief, a different behavior or a habit. And that morning habit, ooh, I'm telling you, it works wonders.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, you can't really affect anything but how you react to things. So knowing that you're reacting poorly or knowing that you're anticipating, like you said, your to-do list or anything that's dragging you down, just look at it with a different paradigm change. And obviously it's not something that'll happen overnight, right? It's, you can't go from negative Nancy, let's say, to positive Peter. It doesn't make sense, right? It's progressive, and just as long as you notice that you're mostly in the pit, you can dig your way out.
Definitely. And yeah, it can be a process. I've also, I also love to think about this. It is how you think it's going to be. So what if it could be easy? What if you woke up one day and realized all this stuff and had massive change too? So like, I love to fill people with that opportunity or the hope that things can actually change pretty quickly if they think that they can.
Sure.
And so I constantly asking myself questions like, what else is possible?
Yeah.
What if this were easy? You know, what if there's something I haven't learned yet that could change everything today?
Yeah.
I love those kind of questions.
And I don't know, that famous quote, I think it's quoted to Henry Ford, but I don't know if that was debunked, that it was someone else. But if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So
exactly. That is Henry Ford. Yep. I love that one too. And, you know, you mentioned reaction. We're either reacting inside of a trigger or we're responding, and it's the response that is going to be the fine tuning of your life. So if you find yourself constantly in reaction to everything, like already triggered, already feeling a certain way, and then sort of spewing out some reaction to it, that's where you got to stop and feel.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a lot more control over the response, which is where your life changes, right, in those moments.
Yeah. And another thing that people tend to forget, your responses, essentially, the way the mind works is it takes the path of least resistance, like almost anything in nature, right? So if you're always conditioned to respond negatively, well, that's the easiest thing for you to do is to respond that way. So changing those the way those decisions are made in the brain, it takes a little bit of time, but I don't know how. Like, obviously, if you walk a path in the forest and you walk that path for 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, 50 days, whatever, eventually things stop growing and then that path is there. So, but it takes, like, let's say a season, and then next season, if you don't walk that path, well, that it'll grow back. So I don't know how long the seasons are in the brain, but it's not that long. You know, it can be changed, but you just have to acknowledge it. And it's once it becomes a habit. So if it becomes easier and easier and easier, the more and more you do it. That's basically how it works.
That is for sure. I guess there's a lot of thoughts about that. You know, I hear the 30-day thing a lot.
Yeah.
Like if you can just do something for 30 days, you know, you're going to, and that's, you know, for the writing too, for anyone who's interested in making journaling a practice. Best homework I ever had was write every day, write 750 words every day, no matter if you think you have anything to write about or not. And that's like your guy with the, War of Art book too.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty cool thing. You can change up your habits pretty, you know, within those shorter periods of time. Plus, you start to see the benefits.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That is the momentum that you need, right, to keep it going.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when I had my buddy TJ Grimm on, like my second episode, I think, at that time, it was in September, August-ish, I had set myself a goal to write 1,000 words a day. And like the way I was going about it was the first, depending on my mood and depending if I had inspiration right off the bat, the first 100 to 200 words were like literally me looking into my screen, typing like, you are going to write 1,000, you know, like literally typing out my thoughts. And then eventually it turned into content. But some days was better. Some days was off. And then I would also say, like, let's say I would get to like my 800th word. And the content would kind of dribble out, and it would be like, well, I'm kind of just writing now to reach my 1,000 words type thing. But unfortunately, I've not respected my goals. But like I said earlier, I will begin some form of journaling. I have some projects that I'm working on, and journaling is gonna likely really help my success probabilities, let's say. So I think I've found my one of the tools that I need to use to make those projects happen. So it'll be a 2-for-1. It'll be great.
Well, and you know, you're talking about the hardest thing for everybody is that accountability. We want to stay accountable to our own dreams and goals and desires and, you know, mission. And sometimes staying accountable is tough. And I know that you know a lot of tools for that, but writing in community is fantastic when you get yourself with other people doing some of that. And if you're okay with it, I'd love to share one of the programs coming up this year about that.
Please. Yeah, please.
So the Write Habit, WRITE, the Write Habit is an online writing club that I developed exactly for this purpose. And so we're doing it online, mostly on Zoom, a little bit on Facebook, but mostly on Zoom. And I really, you know how they say, if you need it, create it.
Yep. Yep.
So I created this because I wanted to stay accountable to this book this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be journaling. I've got a lot of journalers in that club. And I also have a lot of entrepreneurs and people who are writing their books or they want to blog, you know. But there is something to be said for being together, having the discussion about what's going on. And I do some guided body awareness and guided writing prompts. And then we have silent writing time together. And it's been fantastic, if I do say so myself.
I don't doubt that at all. I don't doubt that at all. And so that it's a, is this the first time you're going to run that workshop or the Write Habit? Is that something you've done in the past?
Yeah, the Write Habit's been going on. It's a new program, and it's, oh gosh, I think we're about 2 or 3 months old, so it'll continue into the new year. And yeah, it's been really fabulous. I started it a few months ago, again, just to stay accountable to my own writing process.
Yeah. And where do people find that?
Y'all can come over to bravehealer.com, and if you scroll, you'll see the Write Habit. There's a tab you can click on, and it'll give you all the info. And you know, honestly, I have to I'm proud of myself because I wanted to offer something to people and really pay forward the tools. So you guys can try this out for $10 a month.
Awesome. Awesome.
So perfect. It is like the least expensive way to be part of this Brave Healer revolution that I'm building. And I really try to pay forward the tools I've learned in my healing career to you.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And so why don't we talk about, another topic that really piqued my interest, was, Feng Shui My Soul.
Yeah, perfect segue. So I write to feng shui my soul. Listen, this is the process I was talking about earlier. I don't want you guys to get paralyzed in this journaling or writing process if you think that somebody's going to read it and that's the reason you're not writing. Clearing out what's on the inside and moving it out to the page onto the outside is this magical tool. You're clearing a space for the connection, the creativity connection. So you guys know how decluttering, literal physical decluttering, can make you feel good, like you can even breathe better.
Yep.
If you've done any. Yeah.
So I've tried to, because I need to, but it's harder said than done.
It is hard.
Or rather, it's easier said than done, rather. Sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's the tool. So when you do it on the inside with writing as one of the ways, but you know what? I also believe that speaking can be a piece too.
Yeah. And, and like to you, you said that you use writing as your kind of your outlet, your gateway or something. For me,
yeah,
it's this podcast. Like when when I'm able to do, I try to do 2 interviews per week, but again, like the last month or so has been kind of hectic. We're in the middle of like selling our house. I changed jobs. There's kind of so much going on at once. But I try to do like 2 per week, and that way like gives me a backlog. But more importantly, it gives me like an hour and a half, not like a vacation or something, but I'm able to really just get focused on the interview at hand and do like my learning, you know? So for me, the podcast was something very beneficial. And now, like I said, I'm trying to get back into blogging and journaling and all that stuff. So all of these outlets, all of these little things, in the past, I'd also used like the gym to kind of get rid of some stress, get rid of some energy or whatever. So anything that you can use to as an outlet is beneficial. So just find what you're able to use and get at it, basically.
That's exactly it. It's what shifts your energy. And again, clears a space for that sort of energy to move through so you can be connected to, it's really a creative flow. And every human is a creative being. And some people will say, I'm just one of those crazy people who says everybody is a writer, an artist, a healer. It's just, if you don't think you are, you just don't know it yet, or you haven't connected to that space yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're all born creative, and that's the way to connect. And it is different. I love that you say that. There's so many different ways to do it.
Yeah.
You just have to find your way.
Yeah. And there's also there's no fault at finding multiple ways, because you'll get less bored. You'll be able to do more, like more often. You'll be able to find a gateway if you have more of those outlets type thing. If you only have one, let's say, some days you won't feel like writing, so you're like, oh, I'll take this week off, but then you have a week off of where you're kind of just internalizing. But if you have like writing and the gym and playing guitar and doing whatever, you have multiple sources, you can really always evacuate that energy.
That is true. And isn't that fantastic? And you mentioned the music, because music in any capacity is one of those gateways. Oh my gosh, such a powerful way to shift your vibe. Literally, you have to realize that we are all energy and vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have that power to shift our vibration in any moment. Music is just one of the fastest ways.
Yeah. It could change your mood, right? You put on a song that kind of brings you back to a sad time where you're probably going to shed a couple tears and feel a little bit down. But on the swing side, if you hear a song that really makes you think of something happy and a great time in your life or whatever, even if you're dwelling on something super negative, you hear that song and you're going to be upbeat. So it could change anything in the snap of a finger. It's really, really neat.
Yes, agree. That's awesome.
And so back to, sorry, I kind of went on a segue outside of feng shui your soul, but in the same vibe. If you want to just finish up on that.
Oh, you know, I think we really covered it. It's just that the writing tool can be a way to clear out. And if you guys haven't done any physical decluttering, let's get back to that idea for a minute.
Perfect.
Try it. Even in a tiny, tiny way. You know how most of us have a junk drawer?
Mm-hmm.
So just work, you know, try it with one drawer. Try just cleaning out one closet. Do the underneath of your bed. So any of these, yeah, seriously, any of these spaces, what happens is when you clear that space, you open up space for energy to flow.
Yeah.
So, you know, same thing with the writing and or the speaking and, you know, podcasting and speaking is definitely one of those ways. You're shifting the energy and you are creating a flow. That's it. It really is simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because decluttering is something, being that we're selling our house, you know, you have to have people come in and visit and all that stuff. So we were able to really do a huge chunk of decluttering and like kind of see where there was like problem areas type thing. And now like unfortunately my basement kind of, attracted most of the clutter because we removed clutter from upstairs and the main floor, but kind of shifted it to a different place.
Yes.
But at least let's say visually on the surface, the two upper floors now look like pretty decluttered, right? So that alone gave some breathing room as well, though. But the basement is still an area to be fixed. But one of the reasons that we wanted to move was just to get kind of like a bigger space. Not really a bigger space because we're actually probably going to downsize, but we want like a garage and like a workshop and like places where everything can find their own place. And then whatever doesn't find its own space, well, it won't make the move type thing.
Yep.
And also like we have, my daughter's 4 and we have a ton of baby stuff because we were not sure if we want more, not sure if we can have more and all that stuff. So we're kind of like holding on to it. But at a certain point we're like, well, if anything, we could rebuy it. You know, as long as you get rid of the clutter, I think we'll feel better. And then, so we'll spend money later. It's a pro for a con type thing.
It definitely is. I had a couple of years ago, I made it my goal to actually get my car in the garage. And so I am happy to report to you that decluttering did happen. And my car now lives in the garage, especially during the winter, which I love.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you gotta love it. Like you know, you get a house with a garage and what do? You fill up the garage with crap.
That's right.
And you know, it's like, oh my God. So I'm telling you that now so you don't do it.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. For me, my wife, every time I say I want a garage, she's like, yeah, but my car is going in the garage. I'm like, okay.
There you go.
I'll have like a space for my tools, a little gym area and all that stuff, but we will make space for your car, honey. I keep saying that because it's funny. My parents have a garage and when I was living at home, I had a project car, if you will. So I was able to make space in their garage and it ended up in the garage for a little while we were working on it. But then after like my mom got a treadmill and my dad wanted a bench press and then a this and then a that. So eventually the car kind of shifted out. So for them too, but they're also in the middle of moving. So they decluttered their whole house. It was actually kind of amazing how they were able to just like liquidate so much stuff and like they didn't sell, but just like remove it from their home. And so the car isn't going back in the garage yet because them too, they kind of removed stuff from the upper floors and kind of into the garage, but they were still able to, like, I think like the garage was, let's say, over full. Now it's like half full, but still the car doesn't fit, but they're getting there though. That's the idea.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, you're making me think of something. I think we hesitate on the decluttering. The first thought is, well, I'll sell all these items that I don't need or want anymore. And then the problem is that becomes such a huge project, it never gets done.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to take pictures of stuff and list it on these sites and blah, 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 blah. So when I finally decided that I was going to be giving things away, everything changed.
Right. Right.
You know,
yeah.
And I did the Goodwill thing and I did that for like, seriously, I did it for a year to get that garage empty.
No doubt.
But it was definitely worth it. And that's a different energy, you know, kind of shifting a little bit. It's the energy of gratitude and generosity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
you know,
coming back to having an Italian immigrant father, I think this has something to do with it. And dad, if you're listening to me, I don't think this will surprise him, but, like my father, he's known for having like clothes still with tags on them in his wardrobe, let's say, and like he's had clothes, let's say like a polo t-shirt or whatever, folded nicely in a thing. When he finally goes to wear it or whatever, the creases are so, like, they've been folded for so long, it's like, oh, you can no longer wear that type thing. And, like, so I don't know, like I say, I mentioned that it's part of, like, the immigrant status because, you know, when they came, they were kind of poor, so you kind of hold on to everything you have because you feel like, well, if I spent a dollar to get that, I need to keep it because it's worth something. But slowly but surely, he kind of, like, now he doesn't have... doesn't have any more like brand new clothes that he keeps. He takes the tag off as soon as he brings it home type thing. Like it's a process, right? You get better. But like being his son, for me, I still hold on to a ton of things. Like I said, my basement is no decluttered space just yet. But I feel like, you know, you're a product of your environment, right? So, and again, like, I don't know if it's because he's an immigrant or because whatever, but I kind of associated the two, and it's like father, like son, I guess. And now I'm kind of hoping we can shift that energy and declutter right away so my daughter doesn't have to live that, you know, in the future.
Exactly. And you're already doing it with the awareness about it. That's and just it. Even talking about it, you are already shifting it,
that's
you know?
Right. That's right. Yeah. And that's what's so awesome about energy is as soon as you make that shift, that path opens. So just keep walking that path and eventually nothing grows.
Yeah, and I could make a comment about healing in this respect too, y'all. You're doing the healing for your kids. Mm-hmm. So you're doing it for you, of course. You're actually doing it for your parents as well. Sometimes our parents that didn't have the capacity or the resources to do that healing they needed to do. And so here you are in the middle of this healing journey and really wanting things to be different for yourself and your children. You're doing it for a lot of reasons. And we get pushed outside of our comfort zone when it comes to this. But just know that it's worth it in so many ways, you know, to really feel and address what's going on for generation before and after you.
Yeah, and it's funny. I didn't even think of that. Like, I knew that I was doing it for my daughter, but I thinking like going a generation up, I never thought of that. Yep. And it totally makes sense. And it's, I mean, like, we're seeing it. Like I said, like, my sisters also, they're doing some decluttering just because, like, once you see it happening, let's say if I started it, in this case, my sister had done the first, she actually decluttered, you know, like, we've been talking about it forever, but then she sent us a picture on Facebook and she goes, look at this. And she had like five garbage bags full of stuff that she was going to give away. So it kind of started the ball rolling. And now that you mentioned that, it makes sense that started it. And then my parents did it. And then I did it. It's great. And it really, really does work both ways.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Awesome. And do you want to plug, promote, or talk about anything before we wrap this up?
Well, I will just guide you all back to bravehealer.com. I've got some really awesome programs in 2019. The Right Habit is one of them. I'd love to see you guys in the online writing club if that turns you on. And yeah, if you're interested in this work that you've been hearing me talk about, the book might be cool too. So Brave Healing is definitely on Amazon. And come play with me on Facebook at Kick Ass Warrior Goddess. And yeah, I would look forward to connecting with some of your listeners.
Fantastic. I will definitely be checking out Living Healing and Taekwondo to kind of get the vibe of how a journal turned into a book, how like a memoir was created.
Ah, yes.
Because like I said, my particular journey that I'm starting, I feel like a journal is going to help that journey, and I think it's going to be a powerful tool. And furthermore, if I could create a book out of that, I think I win, and I think people who read that will win. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I'm excited for you. Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
It's my pleasure, and I have no doubt that within the first 10 weeks of 2019, that workshop will get that book, the first draft, finished. I can't wait to see that published, and thank you very much for taking time on a Sunday, no less, to discuss.
Hey, no problem. Thanks. Have a good one.
You too, Laura. Thank you very much again for being on. To everybody listening, I want to let you guys know again, this is going to break 500 listens with this episode. Thanks for joining me on this journey. It's going to keep going, keep getting better. As always, much love, be good. Peace, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Scarfo Show.